Did you know that the original Final Fantasy creator, Hironobu Sakaguchi, made a spiritual successor to that legendary series called Fantasian for Apple Arcade, and every level in the game is a handmade, physical miniature model? Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. That's sifter.com.au/arcade for a 1 month free trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. This offer is for new subscribers only. $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.
Pixel Sift is proudly supported by Murdoch University School of Arts, who have been with us since the very beginning, and it's where we learned how to make podcasts, radio, and video. If you're interested in a creative degree in game, sound, film, journalism, or maybe you'd like to mix and match, you can head to murdoch.edu.au/arts to learn more about what they've got on offer. That's murdoch.edu.au/arts. Or you can search Murdoch University for more information. Murdoch University School of Arts, proudly supporting Pixel Sift. Yes, yes, it is Pixel Sift. Hello and welcome to exactly that, Pixel Sift. The show that brings you the stories of indie developers around the world and from Australia mainly. My name is Scott and joining me tonight is my co-host Gianni. How are you going, G?
I am so excited to be back with the Scott and G train. Very excited.
I like that. It rolls off the tongue. Yeah. Our guest this week is Owen Bolt from Great Helm Studios in Canberra. Thanks for joining us, Owen.
Hey, pleasure to be here.
Yes, Owen is here to talk about the game Dismantle, Construct, Carnage, the action brawler where every part of your character can be destroyed. But first of all, Gianni, what else are we looking at?
Yeah, so we're going to be taking a look at the recent unfortunate job losses from international games development studios, some of which are in Australia as well, and we'll find out how developers around the world are faring and what sort of impact that will have.
All right, let's get started.
Hey there, if you're enjoying the show and you want to hear more, subscribe to Pixel Sift on Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Spotify, or listen on pixelsift.com.au. See you there.
So over the past month or so, various companies around the world, including Activision Blizzard, EA, ArenaNet, have actually had a major restructure, and it's meant that a number of full-time jobs have disappeared pretty much overnight as a result of this. Now, the big one that we hear about in particular was Activision Blizzard, which at their one of their most recent investor calls basically came out and said, yeah, we're going to get rid of 800 staff in one fell swoop across the world, which kind of came as a surprise to everyone because they did a really bumper year in terms of like making money effectively. And to put that in perspective, 800 people losing their job is about the number of full-time employed people in the games industry in Australia. So it's like effectively wiping out the Australian games industry in one fell swoop. So it's quite a big deal, especially for those people involved.
Yeah, absolutely. For those not familiar with FireMonkeys, which is obviously EA's Australian studio, they generally are responsible for the mobile releases on EA's IP. So, Real Racing 3, The Sims Free Play, Need for Speed, No Limits. I'm not 100% sure what else they do beyond that.
Well, Flight Control is
there. You go, beautiful.
Yeah, so FireMint was what it was originally. We've got, and then Iron Monkey Studios was basically merged together. So the EA was another part of this as well. They also had about sort of 40 to 50 job losses as part of that. So that's like a significant proportion. We're talking about, you know, 5% of the Australian industry.
Yeah.
It was originally reported to be about 80, which with that 800 number that we were talking about before from Activision Blizzard and the 800 or so people who are full-time employed in Australia under the games industry, that would have been 10% of the industry like pretty much gone overnight. So it's a significant sort of talk, especially because there has been sort of significant call from a lot of organizations that saying that this sort of development structure and all that sort of thing isn't a sustainable model and that we wouldn't be able to keep working this way and that the burnout level from people working in the games industry is quite full on. So, Owen, I'm wondering, as a game developer, you work in a company yourself, but obviously you would probably have people you would know and people you've met at different conventions and things. What's your perspective on these number of losses that all seem to have happened at once?
So I've actually heard of even more beyond the ones you've brought up, actually. About a month ago, there was a Finnish company that also shut down. But the numbers just keep rolling. Like everywhere, it's still going. Telltale last year as well. Like since then, it's just been an almost continuous supply of companies hemorrhaging people a bit. There's a couple of people around at Games Plus who they've been looking, like some of them are employed like with companies overseas, others like that. I'm blanking out on what I was planning to say. But
it's great.
That's fine. As you were saying, Gianni, Activision Blizzard, we've got EA as well. I'm not sure if you popped it in there, but Guild Wars 2 developer ArenaNet also announced layoffs. And they had like 400 staff on hand. I can't remember the figure on that. It was about 140 layoffs in the end, I believe.
For 143 or so.
Oh, there you go.
Layoffs starting from the 1st of March.
Which is just incredible. I mean, like in a terrible way.
And it is a huge number of people we're talking about. If they've got about 400, that's like about
over a quarter of the staff.
Yeah.
Please
which
go.
Is really interesting. What I think is quite interesting about this and different sort of perspectives to what in Australia, for example, if there is these sort of structures where they do need to downsize, you know, part of the roles is what they need to do if you go through a redundancy process is that they do need to try and find you another job or skill you up and all that sort of thing. But or pay you out, or people working in sort of contract work, because obviously you can work remotely. And as Owen mentioned there's people who work for overseas companies in Australia. Those same rules don't apply. So there's been quite a big push from Game Workers Unite, who we would remember from episode 100. We had Tim Colwell on talking about the push that happened at GDC the previous year for a game development union. And they were one of the ones who came out really quickly to say that this sort of stuff needs to be able to be restructured in a way that can be a bit more sustainable.
Absolutely. There's a couple of really good articles on Games Industry Biz about this. And also a really good one on, it was by Katie Coronis. And she was talking about, you know, making games for a living being in constant fear of losing your job. And she said that one thing is clear, like conditions around layoffs need to improve if the industry is ever going to afford. And yeah, many game developers are going to have to start discussing solutions. And those solutions are going to be following in the same wake of the film and TV industries, which is unionizing. That's obviously not going to fix everything straight away, but it is a step in the right direction that we need to take. Like, you can't have companies, you know, such as EA deciding they're going to lay off people when on the other side of the ship you've got them, you know, earning a total revenue of $7.5 billion profit, and then also, you know, kicking share dividends up for all their shareholders up. It's really a kick in the face to the industry itself. And it's not sustainable. It's not sustainable as an industry because, you know, we are basically a project-based industry. So, sometimes work's going to be there and not going to be there. And we need to support the industry when it's not there. We need to support the workers when it's not there. And a union could do that.
What is quite interesting, I think, as well, is that the Australian industry for a long time, sort of around before the financial crisis, had positions where they were a lot of smaller branches of these bigger studios. So think about like Team Bondi, for example, which was part of Rockstar, and a number of other studios as well. There's people I know in the Canberra game development scene who a lot of them worked for Irrational and worked on series like the Bioshock series, and people who worked for EA and a bunch of other companies as well. And a lot of those companies after that, of these companies were in a financial strife, did actually closed down at their local branches, and that sort of has sort of rippled out throughout the industry in Australia, and we can see people who've moved into that one. But yeah, it's interesting to see that when these times are actually going pretty good, that these people, these companies are still not,
Not giving a shit, basically. To be honest, we'll like that's straight up what they're doing. fat profits, fats, you know, heaps of sackings. That is that is a company at odds with progress in the industry.
If you're just joining us, you're watching Pixel Sifter, an indie game video interview podcast. Our guest this week is Owen Bolt from the Canberra-based game developer Great Helm Games. So at the moment, we're talking about the large number of restructures that have happened across the gaming industry around the world, as well as the number of job losses that have happened at the EA studio, the Firemonkeys in Melbourne, and a number of jobs disappearing from there. Owen, did you have anything else that you thought about this particular situation? Does it make you think about your job as a game developer maybe 10 years down the track?
Going forward, yeah.
Yeah, going forward, the lack of stability is a scary thing to be thinking about for that.
More feeling like you should do it on your own and rather than take a risk and be employed by someone else? Or is that risky too?
Well, see, that's risky as well. Like, you need, like, juggling a small company like ours. We're kind of here. We're continuing on with funding that we've, or it, like, existing funding. And it's kind of hard to really make that much money as it is at the moment. But I have lost train of thought again.
That's absolutely right. Fine, mate.
Right.
But it obviously is something that is, you know, you may want to change your slight direction. You may want to be an employee of someone else's company down the track. And I guess, does that make you think a little bit about what that might look like potentially in the future?
So I have actually thought about this a bit recently. Ideally, I'd probably prefer to be aiming for something mid-sized because the bigger companies, they're the ones that are churning through the people so much. And then the smaller ones, whilst you've got a lot of control in what's happening there, it's dangerous because something goes wrong, then you're out of money and the company can't go on. Yeah. So you're out of a job again.
Does it? I'm curious as well, like we're talking about, there is that obviously a bit of a scary sort of precarious either or sort of situation. Yeah. But obviously there must be enough in it that it's still so compelling for you to be part of it and work as a team. Can you tell us about a little bit about what it's like working in your team?
It's a lot of fun because working on a local multiplayer game, it's like we've played a lot of other games in that sort of space, working out what works, what we want. And the amount of – we've had some of the other – like some of our neighbors drop by and complain a bit about how much fun we were having because we were a bit too enthusiastic at times. Yeah. But, yeah, like working – like it's a lot of fun to be working with people that I get along well with so well on something that we enjoy. And creative product, it's great seeing other people enjoying it as well. So it's a lot of fun with that.
Well, it's definitely an interesting and developing situation. We'll see exactly how this all kind of shakes out down the track.
It's going to be an ongoing issue as well. Like, as I said before, like we really work in a project-based business, so we need to figure out how to handle the team fluctuations needed for larger projects. And unfortunately, the most recent decisions, especially by Activision, seem to kind of show that it's just big business greed, unfortunately. It's really hard to understand valid reasoning behind the decisions when it's all, you know, when the paper trail leaves such, you know, staining whatever. I guess we'll keep following these things. Sorry, Gianni.
And what'll be really interesting to see as well is that at GDC last year, Game Workers Unite was there. That was their sort of first year that they're out. That's coming up next week. I'm sure there'll be a lot of discussions about what the future of game development looks like, and there'll be plenty of stuff to follow on from.
And I'm sure we'll be following it. But until then, we'll hear from our next topic.
Hey, Mitch.
Yep.
You know, there is multiple ways that you can subscribe to Pixel Sift.
Oh, yeah? How's that?
You could subscribe on your podcast player of choice if you like audio-only versions.
Like Apple Podcasts or Pocket Casts?
Or even Google Play if you're in the US. Or you can jump on Twitch and you can give us a follow. Or on YouTube if you like the video versions.
Wow, that's awesome. I didn't know we were on so many things.
Yep, and you'll get a handy little notification as soon as there's a new episode for you to watch or listen to.
Wow, I'm going to do that right now.
I'm sure you will, Mitch, because you're a good boy.
Oh, too long. Too long and too annoying. I'm pretty sure you said there is a multiple as well, which is, you know, look, all right. Which is not a thing.
We'll workshop it. We'll workshop it.
Anyways, we are joined by Owen Bolt from Great Helm. They are making the game Dismantle Construction, Construct Carnage, which is a local multiplayer brawler where you can literally tear your opponents limb from limb and then beat them with them, which is amazing. We spoke to these guys a few years ago at PAX 2016. Gianni interviewed Banjo from the team, four-man team from Canberra. Owain, thank you very much for joining us to talk about the game.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here.
So obviously, what is it? I did a little very brief description there, but how would you, you know, describe the game if you can and as you're going to?
Well, it's, as you mentioned, it's a local multiplayer brawler, so it's designed around the couch experience, like when you've got your friends around to sit down on the couch and play some games. It's for that sort of thing. So you start off by building a robot each, picking your abilities, picking which arms and legs, and then you choose your map, choose the maps and game mode, and then you get started. And so as you beat each other up, you take damage. And your arms and legs fall off. So when you're missing an arm, you can't hold things that require two hands. Missing a leg, you have to hop around. Missing both legs, you have to crawl and down to the torso where you sort of worm along. And then as the head, where you just literally roll. And you can't win as a head, but you can make a nuisance of yourself and bite people's legs off, activate traps, that sort of thing.
There's that Monty Python reference I was looking for.
So can you win if you're completely legless?
When you're legless, yes. When you're still in, with a chance, as long as you at least have your torso.
Okay. How can you be just? Could you just be a torso and a head, and you can win?
Yes, because you sort of inch along and then body slam at people.
It's called the power worm. I think that.
Means. Yeah.
Now, who is the game for?
So we haven't ever specifically decided, like, we need to aim for this particular age group or anything. In showing the game, we've had, I think the youngest, he was in early primary school, I think, and he was just having so much fun beating up his friends and narrating every single thing that he did. But, yeah, so we've had, like, I'm going to guess, like, 8 or 9 or something through to parents that were dragged along to PAX to accompany their kids. And even then, they've enjoyed it while they've played.
Well, I do remember playing it at PAX myself and enjoying it immensely. Mm. It's pretty interesting to see where it came from then to how it is now, especially with evidence such as the Greenlight trailer from 2016, and you have the new Steam launch trailer 3 years on. Obviously, lots have changed, but what can you tell us about the major differences between the game then to now?
Well, back in 2016 for PAX, we had the Grapple Fist and the Rocket Fist. So you were able to launch off the forearm of your arm, and with the right side, you could kind of direct it and, like, remote punch people. And that was a lot of fun, but it was really complicated to keep in mind at the same time as everything else that was happening. And then the left arm, it would fly in a straight line and then work as a grappling hook. So you could pull other people to you, fly to other things. And yeah, that was... Ooh, question about traps and hazards.
Watching the stream.
That's a good point. That's if good you are question, watching actually. On yeah. one of the channels, you can ask questions of Owen on the thing, and you'll be able to answer them live.
Yep.
So I guess you're talking a little bit about trying to keep everything together as you're controlling, like, a rocket fist or
So that was really complicated trying to track all of that, and we found that people would press the button and then forget about it while they started trying to wave their stumps at people because they no longer had the hands.
Right.
And, yeah, it was just adding more complication that we didn't really need at the time.
Yeah.
We replaced that with a bit more of a new ability system where we have charging in ability we call Furious Charge, where you run in a semi-controlled manner to try and break anything in front of you. And then Frenzy, which gives you boosted damage and move speed, and so you can chase people down and and tear them apart. The traps and hazards. We have, at the moment, we have some spin blade traps. We've got this giant crushing wall that kind of compresses the map and breaks anything, like any obstacles in it around there. We've got explosive barrels, of course.
Of course.
Yep. We're working on a flamethrower trap at the moment.
Can you tell us a little bit about some of those environmental hazards? Because obviously there's a lot going on. Bits of you are getting blasted off as you're playing the game. How do you kind of balance those hazards so that they're not so annoying and you feel like you've kind of... Because I know in a lot of games, if someone just like knocks me off something, it feels like a real cheap shot and it really hurts your feelings. You're like, oh, come on, seriously. But how do you balance it out so that there isn't like too much going on and then also those traps?
So... with that, it's a lot of testing to make sure that it's not generating too much salt.
That's a really good way to put it, actually. I like that.
Yeah, one of our team members is
pretty salty.
The salt mine.
Yeah.
And so, it's making sure that it doesn't infuriate him too much, because that's a good indication that it's too much for most people. It's... a lot of trial and error with that sort of thing. And then, as part of that, if you get knocked out of the map, you do respawn. Like, you get teleported back in. So it's not instantly lethal like it was back in the 2016 PAX build. Because when the Crusher Wall knocked out half the map, you suddenly just... almost everyone was just falling straight off the map and dying. So it wasn't really... satisfying like that.
Yeah,
so having the respawn back, adding in that, so you lose a limb when you fall off, but you're still around still.
Yeah.
As long as you got that torso, you're good to go.
Exactly.
That's it. So if you've just joined us here on Pixel Stiff, we are speaking to Owen Bolt. He's one of the developers from Dismantle Construct Carnage, which is a new game from Great Helm Studios.
Owen, you're based in Canberra. You're at Game Plus. We can see in the background right there.
yes.
Did your team form together at uni when it all came together?
Yeah. We went through the Academy of Interactive Entertainment here in Canberra and went through the graduate diploma in management so that we could learn to set up a company and actually function as a company. Mm. And as part of that, we then applied for the incubator grants and funding so that we could continue on.
And so you're working in incubator currently, yes? I'm not sure what you call them exactly. What do you call it?
Co-working space. The incubator program, I think we count as having graduated from that now.
Okay.
Because
look at you go.
Kind of on our feet, yeah.
So you guys as a team obviously met through that. Have you made games together before, even through projects and whatnot?
We did a couple of game jams together before getting started, before deciding that we didn't hate each other too much, so we could actually maybe do this thing.
Yeah.
And then once we went through incubator, we did a number of projects before settling on Dismantle, and then we've also done a bit of contract work as well to keep things going.
Sure.
What do you think the biggest thing you've learnt in this time since you started? Obviously, you were showing it off at PAX in 2016. It's 2019 now. What would you go back and change or do differently if you had to start the project again?
There's a lot of things that I would do differently. We've learnt... one of the biggest things we've learnt is a lot of what not to do.
Yep.
There's... there's some stuff that's a bit of a mess in the background that it's a bit too buried a bit too deeply to easily get rid of and just replace with something a lot cleaner. The contract work that we did, that was that gave me a lot of experience in building something small and some of the optimization stuff that just can't. If I had time, I'd go back and rewrite these huge chunks, but it's we just didn't have time before the game came out. So,
but he got it all ready for next game, I guess.
Yeah,
all those kinks. Like you said, the game is out. It's been out for a few weeks now, almost 4 weeks. How's the reception been so far for you?
It's been pretty positive. Well, none of our reviews that we have on Steam are negative.
That's always nice. That's
extremely good.
Yeah.
There's actually
not
a pretty
that there's
big
many
call.
Yet, but yeah. we've also, like, we sent out a whole bunch of emails early on. Just like on the day of release, actually, trying to see if we could get any coverage. And there's this Russian couple that I think the name translates as Baron Misha or something. Yeah. But they're actually real quite big. The video, when I looked a couple of days ago, had 500,000 views, actually.
Wow.
So, yeah,
is that a surreal experience to see your
it was
watched by 500,000 people?
Yeah, and it was also weird just hearing the Russian voices accompanying the game being played.
How's your Russian?
Weird juxtaposition.
Non-existent.
It but, just isn't.
Trying to look at the Google Translate auto captions, and that mostly worked okay, actually.
Wow.
And yeah, they seem to understand the game pretty well.
Well, look, if people are interested in picking it up, where can they play it at the moment? If they're
so they want Steam, Windows only at the moment. Although, actually, I've had word that it runs really well through Steam's Proton stuff. So, if you're playing on Linux, it's quite playable there.
Yeah, I think it is up advertised when I had a look as Mac, Linux, and PC. But there you go, straight from the fresh off the presses. It's the best on PC. So what's the plan for Great Helm moving forward now that you've kind of kicked this goal? What's the plan now?
Well, at the moment, we're planning to work on some additional content for the game, like the aforementioned flamethrower trap, some more parts to customize your robots, a single-player tutorial and an actual single-player challenge mode as well, actually. But yeah, one of the things that we've had requested the most has been an actual tutorial. So that's one of the things we're working on at the moment.
Fantastic. So if people want to keep up to date with everything that you're doing at Great Helm, where's the best way to keep or to do that?
I think our Twitter is the one that we are keeping the most up to date at the moment.
Which is at Great Helm Games. And
you can head to greathelm.com if you want to check out the game. There's all links to the Steam page and all that sort of stuff, a bunch of cool graphics and videos and all that sort of stuff. What would you recommend, I guess, finally, Owen, if people were picking up the game for the very first time, what's the pro strat if you want to go out there and destroy your friends?
Because that's what it's all about. It's local multiplayer. Come on.
Yeah. Furious Charge is the ability that I almost always pick because it's if you get people, it's a fair chunk of damage. Frenzy is a lot more finesse and a lot harder to actually do so well with. But I've seen people do really well with it. But Furious Charge is a lot more newbie friendly.
Keen points from the developer himself there.
There you go.
Unfortunately, that is about. Sorry, G. What was that?
I was saying, if people play it, they should let us know so we can jump in and
absolutely, and please do. We're strats. Always up for a bit of gaming. Funnily enough,
yep.
And on that,
I should quickly mention.
Please,
it's local multiplayer rather than online.
Yes.
However,
so you do need chums.
Yeah. However, I can unofficially recommend a program called Parsec.
Oh, cool.
So that basically streams the game from one computer to another and the controller back. So you can effectively play on the same, like play couch multiplayer over the internet. It blows my mind a little bit,
I must admit.
It's not the greatest because there is a bit of input delay with that sort of thing. I mean, as you would expect.
Yeah.
But I did play a game against a friend down in Melbourne, and he actually beat me in that particular game.
Oh.
So, yeah.
There's options out there if you've got remote friends that need to be destroyed. So.
Yes. And again, unfortunately, I think that is about all the time we have for today. Thank you for joining us for another episode of Pixel Sift. And thank you, big thank you to Owen from Great Helm for spending some time with us this evening. Be sure to check out Dismantle, Construct Carnage on Steam. Obviously, local multiplayer, but, you know, anything's possible, apparently.
Fine, this, mate.
Technology.
It's gone places. Go find some mates.
Look, if it was that simple, Gianni, I wouldn't have to hang out with you guys all the time. This episode has been hosted by myself and Gianni, one of my good friends. It was produced by Fiona Bartholomeus and Mitchell Lowe, and the executive producer again, Gianni Di Giovanni. Thank you very much to Murdoch University School of Arts for supporting Pixel Sift through all 116 episodes. If you'd like to learn more about a great creative degree, go to murdoch.edu.au/arts. As always, we'll be sticking links to topics we talked about in the show notes on our website, www.pixelsift.com.au. The absolute best thing you can do. Oh, my God. Gianni, jump in, please. I'm full of words.
I've got a suggestion for you.
Are you
saying? If you want to do something that is the best thing, you can head to pixelsift.com.au/discord. You can say hi to Owen who's in there at the moment. And you can keep up with everything that we're doing on there. And we put everything up on there first. But also, as we were talking about, you can play games with us. We do that quite a bit.
Oh, well, so like Blair from the band Hussy Fame joined us this week for the first time for some Overwatch. That could be you. You could be Blair.
Could be Blair. Everyone could be Blair.
Everyone wishes they were Blair, I'm sure.
We've also got some other social media pages, and I'll do a couple, Scott, and then you can do some. All right. You can find us on Twitter and Facebook, both at Pixel Sift, Instagram, Pixel Sift.
Yep.
And we've got streaming platforms to watch all the content as well. Scott, whereabouts can we find those?
Streaming platforms like Apple Podcasts and Spotify and whatnot, Pocket Casts, whatever podcast player you like. We've got them all.
Collect the set.
Give us a star rating. We always like that. We're live every Thursday. Our next episode is on the 21st of March. But next week, as is tradition, we'll be doing Pixel Sift Plays with some indie games we feature on the podcast and more. That's about it.
Owen, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Catch you all next time.
Thanks for having me.
Peace.
Did you know that the original Final Fantasy creator, Hironobu Sakaguchi, made a spiritual successor to that legendary series called Fantasian for Apple Arcade, and every level in the game is a handmade, physical miniature model? Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today at sifter.com.au/arcade for a 1 month free trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. This offer is for new subscribers only, $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.